Now, this third direction, again, is a direct breath, so it's going to be very different. The one, I think, is a rather contracted, you know, it can be erratic or somewhat controlled zigzag. The other, the second one is a more expansive. But the first rhythm that he talks about is this direct one. And if it helps, it depends on your powers of visualization or concentration. On another day, we're actually going to be using an object to concentrate on, and then we're going to do different levels of concentration, contemplation, and meditation with that object. But for now, if it's good for you to have something to really direct your breath at, focus on something on the floor. If you have very good power of visualization and there's something or someone you'd like to offer some sort of direct link to, you can close your eyes and envision your mind and your breath moving in a direct line. But sometimes it's very good to start with eyes open and directing the breath, you know, really directing it in a line towards something. So try that. And you may try both those methods, eyes open, eyes closed. And I might suggest here that we use this opportunity while we direct our breath to see before us in our mind's eye a master, a saint, a prophet, an illuminated being that has inspired us, that we wish to feel a really close, direct connection to. And here, direct your breath towards the heart of that being and see what is reflected back to you along that direct line back to your heart. So use this breath, direct it towards the heart of this being, and let the breath on that direct line return back to your own heart. So on the out-breath, it's as if you're projecting along that line. You're giving, in a way. And on the in-breath, you're receiving. And may I ask you, you don't have to share with us your being or any personal experience. If you wish, you may. But more or less, what it would be interesting to note is, was there a difference in having this breath that's directed? Did you notice a difference in terms of the breath and what that invoked or how that changed you somehow? Samira? Anyone else?
I thought it was difficult because I put my mind into it.
Ah, okay.
The others were physical, more physically oriented. And this was nothing.
Maybe we need more of that practice for you.
Maybe.
Yeah. Anyone else? Yeah, sir.
For me, it was much easier. And since I was invoking my daughter, my three kids were raised here and they longed to be here. And before I came, I had a 2-hour conversation with my 23-year-old about how she sees life on so many levels, so much deeper than her friends when she just went to a graduation party. And so once I was invoking her, I just couldn't. She's just popping in right now, constantly. So it was way easier. You say it's way harder. For me, it was way easier because it just pulled me into this total focus.
Mm-hmm. Focus is a good word, huh? Yeah. Prima Gita?
I was noticing that I just focused my breath, like directed it, because I had visualized this point on the floor, so I was just directing the breath at that point. But in regards to that, of engaging the mind in that concentration, I noticed that I felt very alert,
mm-hmm.
but I also could notice that my body was going, like, you know, almost relaxing to the degree, like the body could just melt into the chair, and then I would pull myself, because I was alert, I would pull myself back into a more erect posture for the breathing, but it was just kind of interesting to notice that play between the mind and the body.
Mm-hmm. But the alertness, the kind of
the mind
direction, is very, I think, very important to note. Yusuf?
For me, there was a real sense of movement more than the other breaths. There was like an outflow. It was like the tide going out. And then a return, like the tide coming back in. There was a real sense of movement. You made it easy with a picture of an icon right there. So.
It's true. So a sense of movement, like the tide going out and the tide coming in. When do you think you want to use this kind of breath? How is it useful? Right, yes, or if you're really needing to make some sort of really strong connection or a point, or a parent with a child maybe can use this breath. It could be very helpful, or between couples, you know, you want to have that direct connection. You know, I mean, and we've all felt that. We could even be in a room full of people, but it's like, you know, there's that connection, a kind of thread in a way, isn't it? Like that tube you were drinking from, but you know, we feel it, right?
When I was looking at the floor,
when I was looking at the floor.
Yes, with my eyes open, staring at one spot, it seemed like the fabric reality all around it started loosening up and it had movement. And then when you said to exchange the energy with someone else, I thought of people that I have maybe a harder time connecting with. And it felt like that would be a really healing way to approach something when you can't go up to somebody and say, I really want to figure out what's going on because there's no words. It's like a big can of worms. But if I can do that exercise, that's something that I have control of, that I can do. It doesn't matter where they're at. It's something I can be proactive about. And, you know, yeah, you do that all the time.
We do. So the point when focusing on one point, things, the material world started to dissolve a little bit, right, and move. But then when that was directed at a person, the realization comes that we don't have to necessarily make somebody work things out with us. People are at different stages, but we can use this with a good intention to have a connection. You know, and again, I mean, we don't do any of this where we're imposing our own will, but to offer it, you know. I think there's a subtlety to not have an expectation of anything in return. You know, my classes tend to have a different kind of rhythm. Can you feel that? I hope it's okay for you, because they're meant to be more contemplative and a little less active. Is that okay? I find that when we change our pattern of speech, it changes the way people hear or listen, and that can have a great influence in the atmosphere too. Often when we come here, we're so excited to see friends and meet new people. We often get very busy with talking, sharing what's happened, whatever. I think that's also very important, but oh my gosh, so much can just happen in the breath and through a glance, can't it? And we have to... I feel that it was also an opportunity for us to rest deeply, to really have some mystic relaxation. Things are, in my world at least, they're very busy. There's a lot of demands. I'm sure everyone has that. And so finding this place where, within ourselves, you know, learning where that is really important so that we can be in the middle of all of it. Yes, I asked.
I have another thought. It's resonating with the last talk. It just didn't feel like connecting, in the sense that connecting is two different places with a bridge between them. It's not like a union.
A union.
There was a moment. It felt like a different breath of energy, but there was a flash in a couple places where it felt like I was like in the same place of an ankle, and I was not really just there.
So there wasn't like it was a conduit connecting, but like a union would came through this breath.
Yeah. And so in that way, then that connection, there's no separateness.
Yes, which is ultimately an illusion, isn't it? That we're separate. Thank you. So again, when one says that a person is wise and thoughtful, it means that they're in the first rhythm. Wise and thoughtful, so that direct rhythm. One says that a person is persevering and successful when he's in the second rhythm. Persevering and successful, so that very steady spreading rhythm. For perseverance and success. And when it is said that this person has lost his head and has gone astray, he's in the third rhythm, this chaotic or zigzag rhythm. And then Murshid goes on to say, he is either digging his own grave or the grave of his affairs. He is his own enemy. Everything he wants to accomplish, however much he wants to advance or progress, all goes down in destruction because he's taken up this third rhythm. The chaotic and the destructive rhythm. Therefore, it is up to us to tune ourselves either to the first, to the second, or the third rhythm. And accordingly, this will become our condition in life. It's pretty amazing, isn't it? It is up to us to tune ourselves to either the first, to the second, or the third rhythm, and accordingly, this will become our condition in life. Yes?
The fourth is something you should avoid.
What? I'm sorry.
The fourth is something you should avoid.
There, he doesn't speak of a fourth, he only talks about these three. I would think that the other one would be, there would be no rhythm. And where there's no rhythm, there's no life. I think that may be the third rhythm. Or the fourth rhythm, excuse me. Are there questions or comments? You look like you're awestruck.
I thought about humor.
Yes.
As being related to the third rhythm. And it would break up kind of an energy openness that perhaps.
Absolutely. And it's like the laughter, too, can break up the congestion.
You can see the application of each.
Can you give us an example?
Well, that's a good one. Another would be we've all had this. My son was having a hard time going to sleep, and his mom couldn't get him. She was yelling at him, this and that. And Charlie was all excited, and I sat down and I said, "Charlie, shh, 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 breathe. Breathe, son." And then I got him imagining him playing soccer with his best friends. Why don't you guys breathe deep, deep, deep? And in like 35 seconds, 40 seconds, it was just
one.
And you can often just say, slow down, breathe, 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 and applying that something, you know, where there is a frenetic panic.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's very practical. Really, in a way, it's called mystic relaxation, but it's extremely practical. But we have to apply it. We have to remember it, and then we have to apply it. Yes?
This may be way off the deep end, but where would you put death? That off the deep end.
Now, are you asking in terms of rhythm?
Yes.
Can you repeat this question?
Yeah.
Where would you put death?
Yeah.
an out breath.
Sorry?
It's an out breath.
It evidently is an out breath. It finishes with the out breath. But we first of all, it's a very complex question. Because what is depth? We have to first define that. And one could say that when one thing dies, another one is born. So then, in a way, what is death? Are we talking of merely the physical body, or are we talking about other things? I mean, the Sufis, I was speaking with someone earlier today, and you know, they were talking about their practicing die before death. Die before death. Die to one's small self so that the true self can be born. Is that what we're talking about? Or are we talking about the body? And Murshid, in other parts of his teachings, again, it gets back to this bringing impressions into the mind. There's a great deal of emphasis on practice and on the breath in most traditions. And part of that is to reestablish certain rhythms, to give impressions. You know, Murshid used to use the analogy, I don't know what he would use now, but it used to be the phonograph records. They'd get a scratch on them and then it would get stuck. You know? And he says that our minds are like this, that there are lines in the mind where we get stuck. And so the practice, the work with the breath, the work of zikr, the work of wazifa, all of that is prayer. It reestablishes a vibration. It gives a new vibration. And again, it clarifies, you know, the Sufi gives those examples. You know, you hear it in zikr. Cleanse the mirror of the heart. Cleanse the mirror of the heart. Well, you know, that is so that all things can be reflected. Or like a beautiful lamp sometimes, but the light has become dim because there's dust on the shade. So it's like washing that, you know, like the globe, so that the light can radiate out. It has a greater sphere of radiance and influence then, illumination. And so the practices help to do that. And Murshid talks about the practices help to... Wali Ali says this, but I've also been witness to it, having lived in the deserts of the Middle East, where the great winds come through and all of the impressions on the sand just move and they're gone. This is how the breath is. It can come through and it can remove those deep grooves, those ruts, those impressions. And it can clarify, it can give a new landscape altogether.
Sort of like the wave coming from the beach.
It's true.
Smoothing some sand.
It's true. It's true. And it's just, you know, if you can imagine that, and the breath comes in, and every moment is an opportunity for that. Some traditions, I know, Unity, there may be people here from Unity, they work very much with affirmations, positive affirmations. It's the same kind of thing. You know, give a different impression. Give a different impression. You might think of using that visualization of sometimes it also happens in snow. You know, there are tracks and then there's new fresh snow that comes down and everything becomes pristine. Use that visualization, or like the desert where things become clarified, cleared, smoothed. Yes, Ali Khadr.
You talk about three breaths, three rhythms?
Three rhythms, yes.
Three rhythms. I mean, we are taught that there are many, many types of breath and, I guess, rhythms also. I mean, I keep going into other kind of lots of rhythms, you know, like just the physical rhythm of your life.
Yes.
Maybe not particularly akin to the breath you're in, but certain rhythm. But this is, folks, my question was, this is more akin to the part of mystical relaxation or meditation of that these breaths are important in this particular topic?
Oh, I think I've gotten lost in the question, Ollie Cutter. Can you?
These three breaths are more.
They're not breaths. They're not breaths. They're rhythms. Mm.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm. We use the breath to demonstrate that. I thank you for clarifying that. Yes. They're rhythms. So we're really talking about rhythm, and I use the breath like Mary Angela Savitri was talking about. You do that with a body experience in the breath. I just use the breath to highlight that. I don't mean to confuse anyone. Is that clear? I remember one time, and there are others in the room that maybe can highlight this because they apply this breath. Hiramurshid Hidayat and I, Khan and Murshida Aziza, were staying with us in our home. And I don't think they would mind. Murshida Aziza had a slight illness while she was visiting, and so she had taken rest. And so there was at one point where we were trying to go for a walk. And I said to Murshid Hidayat, because he is a real master of rhythm. I mean, he's the composer of amazing music. If you don't know his music, it's extraordinary symphonic music where he blends the modalities and sophistication of the great, you know, Eastern tradition with the great Western tradition. It's really quite extraordinary. And in his lifetime, his music's being recognized and played in the great music halls, mostly in Europe, but some in America. It's quite extraordinary. But I said to him, what rhythm would you give to us to be able to move efficiently, to get some rhythm in our walk? And he said, you breathe into the count of two and out to the count of three. Into the count of two and out to the count of three. You would be amazed what that can do. You feel as if someone has picked you up and is moving you. Practice it a little bit. It's quite extraordinary. You just feel totally as if you're lifted and being elevated on wings. Does anyone want to talk to that? Speak, please.
Well, and to
speak, please.
Sorry. and he really encouraged us to, when walking, to line that up with our steps.
With your steps.
And I was, and we were all amazed at the speed with which you can start moving that, you know, usually would really require effort. And it didn't feel that it required effort. The breath just moved you right along.
Primavita?
I'd like to add to that because I take my walks out at a lake. There are times when I'm walking when I feel like my legs are just like a big heavy weight on the end of my body, and I feel like this is hard work, this trying to stay fit. And I remember that breath, you know, the one, two, and with your step, one, two, three. And it really is quite interesting, even in that practice of walking just to get fit and applying that I move faster and also my legs don't feel heavy anymore. So it ties into what you're saying also. And it really helps sustain the rhythm for me that I don't get tired. I can keep moving and it becomes steady and I can keep moving at that same pace where before I would become tired if I tried to move faster on 1-2-3-4, 1-2-3-4 breath, which is what I used to.
Right. So breathing in, 1-2, 1-2-3, out.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the rhythm. Yeah. That's the count.
So these rhythms are so important, and we forget, I mean, it highlights again the significance of rhythm, the rhythm of life, you know, and how we can invoke these rhythms to help us in our everyday life. It in a way, it demystifies mysticism. It's very practical. Well, I'm going to just read a moment from this new hot off the press book called An Introduction to the Message in Our Time by Hedayat Inayat Khan, the son of Hazrat Inayat Khan. He has been working very hard to put together a collection of works, and I've had the great privilege of designing it for him, and we just got these on Thursday. So, day before yesterday. So we have them for sale here, and all proceeds go to benefit the continuation of the work. And by the way, Murshid Hidayat doesn't receive any of the funding. He wants it to go absolutely to help the Sufi message. So please know that. And just a little public service announcement. We have them in paperback and hardback editions. He was very happy, this rose. I'll tell you a little story about it. You can concentrate on it and direct your breath at it. Or towards it, I should say. We were talking a few days ago, and he said, I'm so delighted at that image that you selected for the cover. And this image is from a bouquet that we purchased for Murshid and Murshida Aziza Hidayat at summer school. And this was part of a whole bouquet, and I took a photo of it because I thought it was such a beautiful bouquet that had been prepared. And this rose is from it. And then Murshid Hidayat said, well, you know, I'm really very delighted with that yellow rose on the cover because it is an ancient mystical symbol of the Sufis. And what's more is, my father always had bouquets of roses in the Oriental room, which is where they did practice. And Murshid, Hazrat and Icon would meet with his students. So it's, remember that when you see yellow roses, a symbol of, we also say they're a symbol of friendship, which is also very much a Sufi trait, isn't it? So anyway, that's the cover. And the back also has that image. And I'd like to read this quote to you from a speech that Hazrat Inayat Khan gave in 1926. Keeping in mind that he passed, this was in September 1926, and he passed February 5th, 1927. I always look at those later teachings because I feel those were very clear directives to us of his intention of the message in our time, and in our time, and in our time, and in our time. Living tradition. Beloved ones of God, the Sufi message is a message today being given to humanity. It is not a message of the East. I'm going to say it again. It is not a message of the East. I hope you can understand what's being said there. It is not a message of the East, but it is the message of the soul, the spirit. The Sufi word means wisdom, which comes from the root safia. It is the work of that wisdom to give the message today to humanity in order that people may come together in a better understanding arising beyond the different sections of castes and creeds which divide mankind. The Sufi message is an answer to the cry of humanity today. at this moment, when materialism is all-pervading and commercialism is continually on the increase. The Sufi message respects all religions, recognizes all scriptures, regards all the prophets held in esteem by large sections of humanity, and is the source and goal of all. His wisdom is one. His wisdom is one. So just a few pithy, short teachings from this text. But this is on the subject of the science of pranayama, breath. And because we do so much zikr here, it might be nice to hear Murshid Hidayat's thoughts on breath and zikr. And he says, this is part of a larger teaching, but he says, for instance, when practicing the zikr, the heart chakra, and up to this point he's talking about directing the breath, so in that first method of being using the breath to direct it, he's talking about directing the breath to various chakras to awaken them in this text. But here he says, for instance, when practicing the zikr, the heart chakra is awakening, and the consciousness becomes thereby most brilliant. While at the same time, the other chakras awaken accordingly, although with lesser intensity. So it's like an instrument, where if you pluck the string, all the other strings start to vibrate. It's the same principle as becoming the keynote, setting a kind of rhythm that can also help bring about greater balance and rhythm in one's atmosphere. So he's talking about that there, when in zikr, you know, the instruction is to stay focused in the heart, and that chakra will start to awaken and vibrate. And when it does, it will awaken and vibrate the other chakras in a sympathetic resonant vibration. So no matter what's going on in this circle, keep concentrated there. Sometimes can be very fascinating, the external environment or what's going on, but if you stay centered there, the effect will be great. I'm skipping to another section where he speaks of the science of breath seen from a spiritual point of view does not necessarily mean development of volume, but it refers essentially to refinement of the inhalation, as well as the ability to direct the breath mentally to a chosen imaginary image. So again, here's that first breath, the direct breath, that's the first rhythm. The development is of essential importance for a growing physical well-being, as well as providing the support for higher consciousness. So embodiment, embodying higher consciousness in the physical, well-being. It's all connected, it's all interconnected. I'm very excited that these are available to you. I hope you'll support that work.
Well, I'd like to say about the book, I thumbed through it, and for people who aren't that familiar with all the teachings, it's a really great synthesis and introduction without reading 12 volumes, because he's got pieces out of a lot of the different books. I was talking to some of the kids from youth camp, and they were having trouble, you know, they've got it, they caught it, but, you know, they don't have the volumes of information and some of the old folks. So it's a good book for an introduction, I really.
Thank you. It's Murshid Hidayat is that way. He's very direct and to the point. I mean, when you ask him a question, he's very, 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 very direct and pithy. So, you know, it's like he takes that distillation. He can distill large amounts of information. And even one sentence, you can just read again and again. It's very powerful the way he writes and articulates himself also. Check my watch here. You all have been fabulous. So let's end with the purification breaths. And this is a breath where Murshid tells us to, not tells us, he instructs us, he advises us to, again, Murshid Inayat Khan, to do this practice in a rhythmic way, in a way that we find our own rhythm, our own natural breath. So first, just now, tune in to your own breath. And sometimes that sounds so simple, and yet when one starts to really observe one's breath, it's not an easy thing, because we want to immediately change it. You're not changing, just observing. And I like reading from his words, because it gives us a sense of his instruction and the emphasis of why he thinks this practice is important. And I know many of you have heard this, but it certainly bears repeating. First of all, he suggests that everything becomes very loose and open. So you noticing if there's any tension around the eyes, you know, how do the ears feel? Are they just sort of hanging there on the sides of your head? Or sometimes we get tension in our temples, the jaw, let the jaw be relaxed. You can let the relaxation flow over the shoulders and down the arms and through the whole body. So things become settled down and relaxed. And he says to us, inhalations and exhalations are done rhythmically in a restful, quiet manner. Slower than the usual breath, yet slightly fuller. So let the breath become very full. In this way, we're sort of taking on that second rhythm. That one that is spreading and has a great sphere of influence, expansive. And he says again, inhalations and exhalations are done rhythmically in a restful, quiet manner, slower than the usual breath, yet slightly fuller. It is important to discover the natural rhythm of one's breath, the natural rhythm of one's breath. So here, just a little commentary. This ties into Ollie Cotter's question about breath and rhythm. Again, finding our natural rhythm. Only when we know what the natural rhythm is can we know when we're out of rhythm. So here we study the natural rhythm so that when we become a little out of balance or out of rhythm, we can retune back to that rhythm. And he says, Murshidanayak Khan says, while inhaling and exhaling, one's thoughts are focused on receiving and radiating. Receiving and radiating. And here's a little bit like the direct breath that we did while we were receiving from our beloved and we were also sending. So we're receiving on the inhalation, we're radiating on the exhalation. Did I say that right? Receiving on the inhalation, radiating on the exhalation. And he says, while inhaling and exhaling, one's thoughts are focused on receiving and radiating the divine power in space. The divine power in space, which purifies and revivifies and which inspires and ennobles the soul to unfold. Which we're radiating, we're absorbing, and we're radiating divine power in space, which purifies and revivifies, and which inspires and enables the soul to unfold. And here are the thoughts that we put on the breath. While breathing in the nose and out the nose, we inhale. I inhale divine light and life. And while breathing out, I radiate divine life and light. So we breathe in, and the words are light and life, L-I-G-H-T and L-I-F-E, and we breathe out, they reverse. Life, L-I-F-E, and light, L-I-G-H-T. So it's as if we're moving from the very subtle to the more physical, and then again from the physical to the more subtle. Light and life, life and light. And we're breathing in the nose and out the nose. Remember to keep the rhythm natural, but at the same time, the breath is a little bit more full, more deliberate. And think of it as the breath is coming in. You're taking this in. This is where yoga becomes very internalized. We do external yoga where we hold certain asanas, postures, but now we're working very subtly internally. This is an internal yoga that you're breathing in. It's really, really is purifying and revivifying from the most base level of your lymphatic system. Your nervous system gets altered. The circulation gets altered. The organs are getting massaged in a way. So let that breath really move in and out. I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. And then you breathe in the nose and out the mouth. I inhale divine light and life, and out the mouth, I radiate divine life and light. in the nose and out the mouth. And the next breath, the third breath, is in the mouth and out the nose. In the mouth, and breathing out the nose, while we're again repeating the phrase, I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. Breathing in through the mouth and out through the nose. The last breath is in the mouth, in breathing in through the mouth and out through the mouth, right, again repeating this phrase. I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. And if now you'll return to breathing in the nose and out the nose and follow this rhythm, breathing in, think these words, Beloved Lord, Almighty God, and breathe out. Through the rays of the sun, and breathe in. Through the waves of the air, and breathe out. Through the all-pervading life in space. And breathe in. Purify me and revivify me. And hold your breath and think the words, and I pray, and then release, breathing out. Heal my body, heart, and soul. Tomorrow we'll be talking about planetary influences, and we'll continue with the study of these rhythms that again will be highlighted with a breath practice that is so beautiful. It can help you go through the development of an accomplishment, a receptivity, and start to set up a resonant vibration so you get clearer about the vibration in the soul. So that's looking a bit ahead. That's what's going to be happening tomorrow. And I welcome you back and thank you very much for your kind time and attention. It's been wonderful to share with you all. And you won't mind, we do publish the teachings. Is everybody okay with that? I did call some of you by name, but you don't mind, do you, if we post these online? Because there are people that live far from us that like to be part of the teachings. Is it? Do I have your permission? Okay. Thank you. Alhamdulillah.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.